the things that were like little keys to the doors and rooms I wasn't supposed to be in. How could this happen? She didn't stop for almost an hour, and I almost had to hold my hand down. I wanted to hit her, smack that smiling, helpful face, and scream, "How do you do it? What has happened to that part of me?" Do you want to know the part that frightens me most? The only thing people think about me right now is that I'm going through my adolescence. Everyone still sees the smiling Laura Palmer, the girl with perfect grades and perfect hair and perfect little fingers that want to sometimes, late at night, go into the mirror to strangle the daydreaming troublemaker I see in the reflection. Today, I will go to see Donna and I'll talk to her. I'll talk the best I can. I have no schoolwork left to do, and I've already finished 2 extra credit projects. I made the honor roll and the junior debate team. I pray all of the time, but have never felt worse in my life. I am starting to think that a few moments of the good, in the middle of miles and ages of bad, is better than no good at all. I hope Donna still wants to be my friend. If I can, I will tell you what happens with Donna. Soon. Laura. April 24th, 1986. Something just came to me. A memory of skipping. I was small, looking up at him, before he told me to lie down or to say things, before he told me that opening my mouth was bad, that we had a secret, before he began to turn me inside out with his dirty claws, before I sat on the tiny hill we used to skip, hold hands, talk about what we saw. He told me what to see, but I didn't see it. I've been blind, I think, ever since the skipping stopped. I want to be left alone like other people are. I want to learn about this soft white suit I wear the way everyone else does. I want to forget the things that suddenly come to me. Something very bad is happening. Why is it happening to me? I think it is real. I think it is real. After I see Donna, maybe I can tell you about what I am remembering. I had forgotten so much, but I can't tell if I am better off knowing or not really knowing at all. Please still be my friend, Donna. Please. June 21st, 1986. Dear Diary, I spent the day with Donna yesterday. For a long time, she wouldn't even really say anything to me. When I started crying, I ran out of her house and just kept running. I was so glad when she came after me and she was crying too. I told her as much as I could. That I was worried about being good because I had been having bad dreams, very bad dreams, and I wasn't just kidding her when I said I wasn't sleeping at all. I told her I wished we could talk about the night with the guys at the stream. But it always seems like she hates me or something. Or I'll have an awful dream and think that what happened was bad. I told her I needed to hear what she thought about that night. I needed to know if she thinks we should be punished for it. Or if I should, because I did more than she did. I just needed to know. Donna told me that she was afraid I wasn't talking to her because I was mad that she hadn't gone as far with the guys as I had, and that I didn't like her anymore because of it. I asked her how she could think that when we had such a nice hug when the evening was over, and I still remember that hug as one of the clearest, nicest parts of the whole night. I told her I was just very confused, And I told her that I didn't know half the time whether I should be enjoying it as much as I was or if I should have been feeling bad. Donna said that the only reason she got out of the water was that she wasn't sure what she felt right doing, even though all of the boys were nice. And then she cried and looked at me very strange and said something that really made me feel weird. She said that another reason she didn't get more into it was that she was afraid to, because I seemed too good at it right away, and she didn't know what she should be doing or how to do it. She wanted to know if it just came naturally to me, or if I had been seeing a boy and hadn't told her. I couldn't answer her for a long time. I don't think I knew the answer. What did she mean, good at it? I told her I remembered feeling sexy and very happy that they liked me and wanted me. But half of that, if not more, was the boys doing, not mine. Plus, we were drunk that night, and it just felt so good to do things I had wondered about for so long. She stopped me there and said that she thought about boys like that, too. I asked her how she thought of them, like what they were doing when she dreamed of them. And she said they were taking her dancing or seeing her at school and letting her ride in their cars. She said she was thinking about being with older boys who treated her like she was a princess, and at night they would come into this big, beautiful bed and lie next to her, and they would talk and kiss, and sometimes they would make love. She said she didn't really like going that far because it seemed too rough for the rest of the daydream. She thinks about sex, though, she said, but it is the kind of sex that goes really slow, like in soap operas. She said she sees it in slow motion, and she can hear music playing, and they roll around, she and this boy, very slow, until it fades out of her head. She said she hoped that my fantasies were as sexy as hers are. God. Diary. Everything was fine until we talked about that. I just had to tell her that my fantasies were exactly the same as hers and that we should never have argued. And I said I was sorry if I hurt her feelings. I should have been more open with her, and that I was only worried that she had begun to hate me for going so far that night. She said she thought I was very brave, and that if it felt good to me, then I should think of it as a good thing. But what about the fantasy she has? I was about to die when I heard how pure and sweet and gentle they were. Why doesn't she think the things I do? I was so hoping we had the same thoughts. I was depending on it. I know she was telling the truth because of how she told me and by how embarrassed she got when she talked about this boy getting into bed with her. She is so pure. I just can't believe it. I think that the times that I have to go into the woods at night have poisoned me. I would be like Donna, I'll bet, if I were still just skipping through the trees instead of what happens now. But I would never, ever wish for what happens now. I wish for things that make me feel sexy and playful. Things that don't take me to do all the work. Things like someone else trying to please me, instead of me always trying to make everyone else happy. I wish there was a place you could go where someone would answer all of your questions and tell you if you were doing the right thing or not. How am I supposed to know when I can't even talk about things, really? I just keep saying the same things again and again. I am running in circles, and it is time that I stop. Donna and I are friends still, and I still love her. But things feel different to me. I can't think the way she does, or even try to anymore. I will think what I feel, and I will try to make people see things the way I do. I wish I had a marijuana cigarette right now. It feels like I haven't laughed for years and years and years. Thank you for listening. Laura. June 22nd, 1986. Dear Diary, I'm just going to write and not think too hard about it, and maybe I can remember more. I just woke up. It is 4:12 a.m. I don't remember when it started, but he has always had long hair. He knows everything about me and knows how to frighten me more than any of the dreams I've already told you about. He first started to play with me. We would chase each other through the woods and he would always find me, but I could never find him. He would come up from behind me and grab my shoulders and ask me my name. I would tell him it was Laura Palmer, and he would let go and turn me around and laugh. When I think about it, he wasn't playing the way he should have been. He was being very mean to me, and he was scaring me all the time. I think he likes it when I'm frightened. He makes me feel that way every time he takes me with him. He likes to embarrass me by pulling down my panties and putting his fingers inside deep. When he knows it hurts me, he pulls them out and smells his hand. He always tells me I smell like bad things. He screams out loud into the trees that I smell and that I am dirty, and he doesn't know why he even likes me. He says if I didn't beg him to come all of the time, he would never come back. I never beg him to come. Never. I wish him far away from here. I swear it. When I started to get older, he would tell me things about myself that I didn't know. I don't think he was telling the truth. I think he was lying to me and making it up as he went along. He always knew exactly what scared me and just the things to say to make me cry. Then he would take my neck and squeeze. He squeezed my neck hard until I stopped crying. He would let go just before I would faint. I think I was fainting. Sometimes that still happens. Everything goes tingly and dark, and my head spins inside, and I can't see anything. And I have to stop crying, or he'll keep squeezing. Sometimes he says, "What's this down here? What's this down here, Laura Palmer?" He always says my whole name like he won't get close to me like that. But he will every other way. Sometimes I would come home bleeding. I would bleed and I couldn't tell anyone, so I would sit up all night in my bathroom all alone and wait for it to stop coming out. Sometimes he would cut me between my legs. And other times he would cut me inside my mouth. Always tiny little cuts, hundreds of tiny little cuts. I had to use a flashlight in the bathroom, or else my parents might wake up and see the light, and I'd be in worse trouble then. Some nights he would make me sticky, rub himself very fast, and he would say that I had to hold the sticky in my hands, close my eyes, and recite this little poem while I licked my hands clean. I only remember a little. This hasn't happened for a long time. "They're sticky," he made me say. "The little bitch is awfully sorry. The little bitch drinks you up." I can't remember more, except the last line. "And the seed is death indeed." He wants me to like it when he is with me. He wants me to say that I am dirty and that I have an odor. I should be thrown into the river so that I will be clean. I am so careful to smell clean all the time. I always wash between my legs and I always go to sleep in fresh panties in case he makes me come with him. I always worry he will come for me and I won't have clean panties. He says I'm lucky he even stays to spend time around me. He says that he's the only man who will ever want to touch me. He comes to the window and I see him. I always see him. And he is always smiling like we are going to have a good time together. I am so close to calling my parents for help, but I am afraid of what would happen. I can't let anyone know about him. If I keep seeing him, he might get tired of me and go away. Maybe if I stopped fighting him, he would not like to visit me anymore. If I weren't afraid, if I could just not feel afraid. I've never thought about him like this ever before. I hope that if there is a God, he will understand that I am trying to keep clean. And if this is a test that he is giving me, I'll find a way to pass it. I bet it is a test. I bet God wants me to prove that I can take orders, or maybe that I'm not afraid to die and come be with him. Maybe Bob knows God, and that is why he always knows what I am feeling inside. God must be telling him what to do to me. God wants me not to be afraid, maybe, of being dirty. If I'm not afraid, he'll take me to heaven. I hope so. Al. July 25th, 1986. Dear Diary, I have been trying very hard not to be afraid. I am seeing a boy I told you about once before. I didn't like him then, but now I think he's just right for me. He reminds me very much of the boy on the wall of the bookhouse. He dresses the same way, but he does not have a motorcycle. I am 14 now. I didn't let anyone celebrate my birthday. I made Mom promise she wouldn't plan anything. I told her at the kitchen table the day before that I had a lot of thinking to do about my life. I just wanted to spend my birthday alone. I wanted to walk alone and maybe take Troy out for a ride. I made sure she knew I didn't want to hurt her feelings, but I just needed to spend some time alone. She fussed for a while and kept asking me why I couldn't spend the following day by myself. I finally told her that I was feeling confused and I wanted to come home on the night of my birthday with everything sorted out. I wasn't going to go far. I promised her that. I just wanted to go. I promised her that next year and the following year, Sweet 16, I will have a party of one kind or another. So I spent my birthday alone. I went out to where I go with Bob. It was light out, and everything seemed like an awful dream, until I saw a piece of rope lying at the back of the base of his favorite tree. I got a chill, but forced it away. I tried to look carefully at the tree to find something that would explain why he picked this place, this tree. There was nothing. I made sure I was alone before I did what I'd planned. I looked very carefully, and when I knew I was alone, I pulled a marijuana cigarette from my pocket. I made Bobby get one for me. He wanted to share, but I told him he couldn't. We could do some together later, maybe. I smoked it very slowly and started thinking about sex, about men, all kinds of them, inside me. I tried to think of things that Bob would like. I pulled a pair of my panties out of my pocket and rubbed them on the tree. I wore them just before I left to come here, so I knew the smell of me would be strong. I'm not afraid anymore either that I smell bad. I know I don't. I think I smell like a girl should. When I put my panties to my own nose and breathe in, I imagine a girl in front of me and how a man would want to touch her, get up close. Bob calls it pussy. I want to touch. Can you hear me, Bob? When I smell it, I'm not afraid. I told myself, I said it out loud many times while I was there, smoking and thinking of all sorts of ways I could touch Bobby, things I'd like to make him do. I thought every thought I could that would call Bob to come. I think he was there, but he was hiding. So I got very stoned, all by myself, and pushed myself onto the dirt, sliding onto the leaves and pine needles on the ground. And I looked up into the great tree. I wanted the tree to watch me, memorize the face of the new little girl who came to lie down. The old one is gone. She had to go off. I only use her voice sometimes. It is so much easier to get what I want when I say it sweetly and like a little girl. I took off my clothes and began to touch my breasts, lick my fingers, and then rub my nipples with the wetness. I made circles the way boys do with their tongues. I made noises when it felt good. I cried out when I pinched them hard and made them pink. The wind began to come up, and I felt it move over my bare chest. And I remember saying, "Whoever that is, I like that. Yes, I like that very much." I felt myself get a little wet inside my panties, so I undressed completely and I talked to Bob out loud. While I touched my secret button, I said, "Bob, Bobby, Laura has a sweet muffin here for you. Nice and clean and, I bet it tastes good too. Come out, Bob. Come out and play." The wind picked up, but I never saw Bob. I came like I never have before. My body just couldn't stop, and I had to grab onto the tree, peel off bark in one place, grab again, dig in with my nails, and then it slowed. I was so warm with the marijuana and my little show for the woods that I almost took a nap there, lying naked. But I couldn't do that. I won this one. He hadn't shown up. Night or day doesn't count. I showed him I wasn't afraid. I touched myself under his tree. I called to him and made him the fool. "I'm gonna pass this test. You'll see. If Bob wants nasty, all I need is a little time. I can be the bad girl he wants." On the way out of the woods, I was nearly killed as an owl swooped down out of nowhere. I could feel the power in his wings as he shot by me. I thought of the log lady, something she has said. "Many things are not what they seem." This used to seem frightening to me, this place. The slightest thought of touching myself and teasing myself frightened me. No more. No. This place I visited is not what it seemed. I see now that it is a place of darkness, but I love it. I welcome it. I will not fight it, even when it slips deep inside and cuts me. I have found light and pleasure inside this horror. I am not done with my plan. I'll be back, Bob. I'll be back to open and close around you like you thought I never would. I'll be back. Laura. August 3rd, 1986. Dear Diary, just to fill you in, I did spend the rest of the day with Troy at the stables. Being around him relaxed me. And I went home later that evening feeling very strong, very new inside. I did not entertain any thoughts of being bad or wrong by doing this. I was going to stop being hurt and taunted by this man, a man I know only by his first name. I do not know where he lives or where he comes from, but I will get him back. There's no fun in a game of torture if the victim is screaming for more. That was almost 2 weeks ago. No, maybe a week. I am very deep in concentration lately. Seeing Bobby Briggs is fun. He is anywhere I want him to be, with anything I want him to bring. Just yesterday, I decided he had waited too long to be with me the way he wanted. I, too, was tired of the process of petting and going home feeling like a cork had been stuck inside me, that it had trapped everything I so wished to let go. But I had to let him think I was the 14-year-old I appear to be. Mom and Dad left for the entire afternoon, and I told them I'd be out for almost as long as they would be, but that I wanted to help with supper that night, so I would be home no later than 6:30. Mom's face shined at the sound of such words. I have to keep my parents happy. I have to keep loving them like their little girl should. I have to support what I have not chosen, but have, quite simply, been given. Two lives. Two very different lives. The naughtier Laura had a date with Bobby Briggs in Lowtown. He said he knew of an abandoned barn out where no one would find us. I liked the idea that I would have him alone someplace where I could go kind of crazy on him. I was nervous for a bit, because I suddenly realized that this was not the Bob I hated, but the young Bobby who swaggered up to smiling Laura Palmer and asked if she would be his. No matter. I'd play him like he needed me to. I knew he was aware that I had never made love with a boy before. I knew it would be different with someone who took care. I knew it might pull me back to 13 years old, when I learned to love a man's hands in a stream late at night and cried because he was gone so soon afterward. I couldn't let that come up. I knew I had to be strong. I could have Bob watching me right now. At any moment. I couldn't fall in love. Certainly not out loud. Bobby was charming, and I could tell he was nervous because he couldn't get his words out very well. And the blanket he brought on the back of his bike wasn't opening as he tried diligently to spread it. This made him very nervous, because I was balancing a bottle of vodka, a small one for two, and a marijuana cigarette, some smoke in between my fingers, and I didn't have as good a grasp as I would have liked, and I had to fall to my knees to avoid breaking anything. He felt very bad, but I turned it around so that he had been more of a hero than a dunce. He was neither, but I allowed him to lift me to my feet and steady me with his arms. I could think only of how I just wanted to take a drink and do some smoke so I could relax. Things come so much easier for me when I'm loose and feeling confident. One of the reasons I most enjoy Bobby is that he can get me smoke anytime I want. He can have a friend buy us alcohol anytime I want. I like the way that feels, that kind of devotion. I enjoy the way he moves, little tiny waves inside him, when I lean in close and say, "I can't wait, but let's take our time." His immediate smile and his readiness to let me take over first. I, after all, was for the first time beginning a sexual experience with interest and affection, a little control of my own. I knew he would take over once he felt I'd let him. But for now, if he was to keep bringing me little treats all the time, I wanted him to feel it was worth it, that he hadn't chosen a dead fish, like I promised I would never be. An hour later, after taking my time with his lips and occasionally feeding him the smoke or vodka, I was ready, and I told him to lie back and imagine whatever he wished. I told him to build a dream inside his head and to let his imagination follow me. It was just for him, We both knew that. I put him hard into my mouth and had a picture in my head of Bob's hand as he did himself, as he put my hand on it. And then I was back in the barn. I slowed it down, found the rhythm he liked, and I kept my tongue moving inside, and I went up and down him, following the noises he made, the whines, listening with delicacy, making sure I kept him where he wanted to be. This time was not about teasing him in and out of his pleasure. He came the way I dream men do, with suddenness after a long internal climb, sitting upright with a look of amazement and awe, gratification, a smile. We spent another hour or so buried in each other, until it had to happen and he slipped inside. I opened my eyes and saw him as his eyes fell closed. I forced the memory of wanting this away, feeling like that would be so easy, and yet I could not become weak. We moved together, and I found it easier to handle, easier to really enjoy, with my eyes closed. I could move with him, roll around to the top, place his hands where I love to feel them. He is so good to me. Without any words, I wanted him to know how wonderful it felt, locked there inside, never wanting to leave, just wanting more and more of me. We rolled and pushed and pulled at each other and came apart hours later when it was impossible that we do more. I felt truly satisfied, like years of taunting and emotional pulling and pushing had been set free. The steel bar I imagined holding me upright was flexing, turning to flesh and melting. The tension and the anxiousness I felt for so long about how it would be when someone really wanted me, not because they wanted me to weep or to die slowly of a sadness I could not name. Someone who cared how it felt to me, wanted to make sure it was nice. I felt like I should feel. Like all girls should feel. But I could not forget that there were other worlds to think of. Other moments. Rude awakenings at the darkest hours of night. A man in my window smiling. Offering a challenge by waving a black glove. I lay there wondering if he would come soon. Or if by my simply deciding he no longer frightened me. He was somehow eliminated. I couldn't rely on dreams like that. And suddenly, there was a terrible problem. A terrible and sad problem that I had to face without the emotion I so wanted to give. From Bobby's mouth came, slowly, small words of love, then confessions. Soon after, promises of loyalty and happiness forever. Laura, Laura, I can't let you hear this. Just watch his lips move. Do not listen, I told myself over and over. But Bobby meant it. He was, after all, the boy who had admired me for years, who had tugged on my ponytails for as long as I wore them, and who soon after made a point to pass me at least once a day in the hallway at school or to catch my eye in class. Smile, as if it were an unexpected sight. I knew he had planned this, but the Laura who loved him back, the young girl who so desperately hoped he would come after her when the time was right, cannot come out to play. She is inside, resting, deep inside, cradled in the braver half, the one that finds this Bobby boy satisfying, yes, but not interesting beyond that. There is no strength in him, no challenge. I'll keep him with me, save him for her, when it is safe for her to come back. But these words of love are too real, too innocent. This boy, so young, is merely a messenger to the Laura that is living here now. I was forced to do something cruel, something that would make him perhaps rethink the entire idea of Laura. He had to see her as something he never thought existed. I had to laugh at him. Hard. Laugh. Until his eyes lost their light. I had to shoot him down. Couldn't let him be so appealing to the same young Laura that Bob wants, the one I'm sure he's waiting for. To save myself, I had to laugh in the face of a boy who now may never be so honest again. I had to do it. Why does it hurt so badly to protect myself? Where was this love when I was on my knees begging for it? Damn it! I know I hurt him. I hope someday he will understand why. I would never crush someone the way I was crushed. Had I been the one laughed at, I don't know that I would ever stand as straight again. Never approach someone with even the smallest compliment, because the memory of laughter would still ring in my ears. I am ashamed and confused again by the things that happened to me. Is this a trick that Bob is playing on me? Another test, ruining my chance at love with the right boy by forcing me to humiliate him the way I have been and have now turned cold and bitter because of its scars? Will Bobby pick himself up and see that I did not mean it? Or have I been tricked into spoiling a romance I could have been protected by, at least during the day? What does life want from me? What have I done? And what do I do now? I only wanted to stop the pain, not to begin spreading it myself. I'm thinking. Everything that had to be done has been done. If this is something Bob did, then it will only cause him an amazing victory if I show any regret, any remorse. I cannot care. I must believe Bobby will come back, tail wagging. If he does not, I shall master the whistle he responds to. Let the boy earn my attention outside the barn lust, outside the kisses I give out only when I feel like it, never just because. I'll become a professional at not feeling anything. I'll find a way to do it. I can't give up. I don't even believe half the time that what I'm living is real. I am lost. Lost. But a stronger, more manipulating Laura is rearing her head and opening herself to threats and games played only in the dark. When I find out who he is, I'll make him known to everyone. To a new strength, Laura. August 3rd, 1986. Dear Diary, it is a little after 10 p.m. on the evening of the disaster with Bobby Briggs. I am surprised to say that he phoned not 15 minutes ago, and somehow in a mass of words that were sounding more rehearsed than heartfelt, he apologized for being too quick to recite such oaths of love when maybe I didn't find that attractive in a boy. That maybe I wanted someone who had to be broken a bit before it all came out. He told me he meant what he had said, but was wrong to say it so quickly. The whole thing sounded like it had been picked word for word out of the dictionary or thesaurus, and I couldn't help but wish for a moment that I was dead. Here he is apologizing for something I, and I'm certain girls everywhere, even outside of the Peaks, dream of hearing a boy say. He's chosen his words carefully, tried to prove he is still, hours after his orgasm, in love. Another miracle. And what do? I am forced to keep silent on the phone, to stifle words of love from my own heart, simply out of the fear that this is all part of a grand scheme to drive me, no brakes in the fast lane, down the road of insanity. I am trapped inside a part of me I hate, a hard, masculine part of myself that has surfaced to fight. After small memories and scars come out of me with a suddenness that is sobering as well as horrifying, and I fight to save the Laura I wish I could be again, the one everyone thinks is still around. Me in a sundress, hair in the wind, and a smile engraved into my cheeks by the sharp fear that a man may visit me at any moment this evening and try to kill me. L. August 4th, 1986, 3:30 a.m. Dear Diary, it comes to me now that I have decided to play along. After repeating it to myself for ages, it seems I finally feel a sense of resolve with my joining him for the sole purpose of battle, to join the darkness, and perhaps cling to the bit of light remaining inside me and use it as the strength it should always have been. Ah, the fairness of life. That special moment when a hand flies up, whether visible or verbal, screaming, "Stop!" She is dying. This child is dying without a safety feature everyone else seems to wrestle with, as if it were an inconvenience. I searched carefully and have found a space inside me that says that it is almost too late. Mine are not the eyes of a girl 15, but the eyes of someone who has been afraid to look around herself and to question the simplest of things. My mind, it continues, is not the mind of a young girl who imagines life to be a series of warm sweaters while the cold spell passes by. It warns me that the mind in which I live belongs to someone who knows too much of life, and how it ends most often without warning, how it deals us blows, dares us to dream when in fact there is no use, manages to leave out that there is a plan etched in the planet for me. This mind knows the reality that there is no choosing a day's events, or even a moment's when before you've even opened your eyes to see light for the very first time, someone of a great evil and stealth chooses you, spins a bottle of sorts and giggles at the power in a simple game of selection. Laura. August 6th, 1986, 4:47 a.m. Dear Diary, I cannot let myself sleep because I have to see Bob when he comes through the window. I have to be ready. I have thought a great deal about my life. I am aging without my own permission. I believe when he comes to take me, I will either leave home and return harmed, although satisfied by the brutal death of an enemy, or I will never return. And in death, admit silently, I knew not of my visitor's strength, nor of his will. For now I am half numb, half raw. A girl who still manages to rise each morning and exit the place I lately must be reminded is called home. As if nothing were less noticeable than the trail of blood left behind me as I go. I do not doubt that Bob is aware of my every movement, that this horror who calls himself a man sits up high when the sun shines or perhaps curls up below. No matter. He watches me with eyes that burrow inside, seeing each speck of doubt, sensing each palpitation of my heart when a boy passes, each embrace from a mother who knows nothing of how far away her daughter's bedroom has become. I try each day to memorize the face that looks back at me in the mirror. I hold tight to it. I imagine I'll be in flight when I compare it to my remains that I often dream soon will be found. I have such an anger and an urge to charge at the sky, to call the wind a liar for never showing itself. An urge to scream at the two who allowed my birth, cries for help to anyone who will hear them. To scream into the street that there is a lack of miracles in Mother Nature herself. Her divinity is a lie. In a forest of trees again and again, I have been brought down. Surgery of a strange and indescribable nature takes place. Blood is let. This Mother Nature has not done away with this evil, nor has it opened its wood to allow a scream to escape. Instead, it cradles this man and keeps him safe from discovery, safe from daylight. He knows the planet will not betray him. This light will come and stay. Leave only to return on schedule. He has a promise. The universe's habit. Conveniently requiring a 12-hour fix of the two extremes. His time is the evening. The hour during which rescue is least possible. And when most with pure hopes and dreams and memories of swinging on swing sets are fast asleep. Their eyes moving quickly under their lids, seeing nothing. Never is there a noise that stirs even those who sleep in the next room. Never does the world lean a bit for me, cast a vote, and cause an eye to open. See the man. See the way his eyes are frozen in the image of my face in a scream. No explanation for why he has chosen me, or even if he has a final plan. I can only wait. Hold my tired eyes open with the energy of a dare, a fight to see who, in fact, is the darkest. Who, when forced to see the other side, will, in fact, survive. I sit awaiting his arrival, kept awake by the notion that I shall grow accustomed to the dark far easier than he to the light. Laura. September 10th, 1986. Dear Diary, enclosed, please find my mind. And its memory. As well, a characteristic the enemy lack in excess. Conscience. Guilt is simply a word he uses to silence me. He has no regard for mortality. No concern for danger. How could such an intruder fear death or the possibility of imprisonment, and still manage to come so consistently up the side of my home, using my window as if it were familiar to him. He mocks me, entering dressed in the clothes of one who could be a best friend, a neighbor, A traveling salesman who casually invites himself in, goes as far as to request coffee, regular, before dissolving into the daydream he sometimes is. Does he expect to sit down and chat before taking the house's only child from her room and treating her like an experiment? I am either dreaming him to life and slowly killing myself, or he has told my parents of his visits and has offered in return for their own safety that these visits will continue without possibility of interruption. They would simply go unnoticed. Junk mail. Somewhere in the house, I imagine that they would have to hear me as I am let out. Is it possible they do not care? L. September 11th, 1986. 2:20 a.m. Dear Diary, I cannot tell you how much it upsets me that I am no threat to him. He is too safe with the idea that he will always gain entrance to my home and exit painlessly and without sound. In the dark, he knows he will find a grip around my wrist strong enough to silence me and to carry me, like a child drags a doll to a place where he knows no one will find me. He knows this because the place is miles from any source of light other than that which pours sometimes so clearly in my memory from his lips and eyes, the very light stolen from within me. The girl who, ever since she can remember, made a patient effort to tolerate and keep secret the very man who wishes to steal her innocence, never allowing her to mature, never permitting the joys of maturity. The time this little girl has dreamed of ever since she knew how to skip and run and smile at even the slightest breeze, the way it tickled her so. Unselfishly, she gave and gave of herself, emptying the delicate basket inside her, of her soul. I hope to call him to my window soon. I fear he is waiting for me to tire of these all-night writing sessions, these moments where I lapse in and out of the part of me who plans to open the window this time and give my hand willingly, the part of me that doubts anything really exists at all, and that therefore there is nothing at all to fear outside that window, and so am willing to venture to the usual spot. Without struggle. I, who swears a noise or powerful slap at the back of the head, will not cause even the slightest change in footsteps. The part of me that has rehearsed its cries for more and more incisions, more insertions, more insults and threats, and has planned to continue them until his appetite, before insatiable, grows smaller. The animal. Frozen solid in front of his shotgun barrel, begging to fill that space on his wall. Remove the thrill. Program yourself. There will be pain, but none worse than before. Hold tight on the image of home, and of bed, and of the warm smell of him as you rinse and rinse and rinse. Home awaits you. As it always has. Play with him as he plays with you. Accept that you are bad and dirty and cheap and should be thrown to the wolves as scrap meat and must never bear children. For who knows the faces they would be locked behind from birth until death? Remember to ignore. Leave an opening large enough inside to take on his body weight and hatred and methods of reduction that only apply to the emotional portions of oneself. The most vital and irreplaceable of all. Believe that he is only intrigued by the fear he breeds. The lack of interest you display in life when he leaves you back at your home. How he pretends to ring the doorbell. mocks you, your life, your hopes, your most private insecurities. Watches as you struggle with the sense that you are unworthy to even enter the house in which you took your first steps. Feel as he watches you catch a tear before it has left your eye. Look for him, and he is gone. As if it were a religion, I have chanted inspirations to myself. For days now, I have whined and taunted and almost wished him to arrive. And he has not. I have an incredible headache from trying to think of his weaknesses, when in fact, I couldn't begin to know them. Perhaps I am wrong altogether about his lust only for the fear in this particular victim. I must say, honestly, I am tired of making light of the situation and believe that if I do not sleep soon, I shall begin seeing Bob everywhere. This, need I mention, would not be good for me at present. I am lonely here, and I find myself thinking about Bobby, who I know would hold me in his arms the way I can't imagine anyone else doing. Be careful, Laura. October 1st, 1986. Dear Diary, I'm sorry I haven't written, but so much has happened. Tonight, as I began to undress for bed, Bobby Briggs came to my window. A beautiful, dreamy sight that sent me reeling. He says there is a party we couldn't miss out at the end of Sparkwood. A friend of his, Leo, who I think I've heard of before in the air of gossip that I often hunt down, is throwing a party. I warned him. I had only thought seriously of curling up with him and confessed that I was missing more sleep than I need to be sociable. He promised me there would be no problem in the alertness department, as he had a new treat for me to try that sometimes negates the need for sleep entirely. I'm out the window, Diary. Shh. I'll tell all the moment I return.